An hour or so later, a station wagon showed up with two soldiers, a male and a female. The male was Sergeant Dabney. He picked both of us up and drove us the 40 miles to Los Alamos. The two of us, had, of course, had been discussing where the hell we were going and what his background was. His background was in metallurgy, and mine was in chemistry. We decided that we were going to some kind of a rocket development facility. Well, we were entirely wrong, of course. The station wagon started to climb from probably about 800 feet in elevation at Santa Fe to about 7,000 feet at Los Alamos. And we were deposited in our respective barracks, and I was told that the following morning I was to go to this certain building for an interview with Dr. Kisikowski. That's all I was told. When I got to this technical building and Dr. Kisikowski came in and he greeted me, Dr. Kisikowski was a physical chemist, a professor of physical chemistry at Harvard. And I had met him at Woods Hole because during this early part of the war, he was the head of something called National Defense Research Commission with headquarters in Brewston, Pennsylvania. He was an expert in detonations or rapid explosions, let's put it that way. He explained to me that I was going to be working under a man named Commander Bradbury. Well, Bradbury explained that I was to be in a certain group led by a fellow named Kosky. And Kosky was one of my colleagues in this group of military personnel known as the Special Engineer Detachment. This is what we were assigned to as part of the Corps of Engineers, bureaucratically. And we had an identification as members of what's known as the SED. When I was assigned initially through Kisikowski and Bradbury to the work that I was to do, I was told that I was not to ask any questions about what this was for. They did not tell me what this was for. And we were told by others in the Army that we were to address our colleagues by first names. Last names were not being used. However, Army personnel being what they are, it took me about a week to find out what this was all about. And at the end of a week, I knew that an atomic bomb was under development. You have to understand that the attitude which many of us had towards the development was very similar to the attitude that Oppenheimer himself had. When it was time to arrange for the tests at Alamogordo, the results of all our effort, when they had the ability to assemble one particular instrument, he explained in colloquiums, which I was permitted to attend because I came to Los Alamos as a graduate in chemistry from Harvard University, and a certain number of people were allowed to attend the colloquiums. Oppenheimer had in his plan for directing the scientific effort the notion that various elements of the project should be explained briefly to those who are working on very narrow areas of the project, so there would be a more complete understanding of what they were doing and why. And he said at that particular time, when they were about to arrange for the tests at Alamogordo, there are many of us here that hope and pray that this project will prove to be impossible. However, if this test fails, we will come back and work twice as hard to make it work the next time. So you see how schizophrenic the attitudes were. And you have to understand that most of us understood that when these weapons were detonated over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they would result in mass executions. And ultimately, it caused the death of about 250,000 people in Hiroshima and about 250,000 people in Nagasaki. And that all didn't take place instantly, but over a period of years as a result of the development of radiation disease. The philosophical aspects of this, of course, were always foremost in many of our minds. And some people who are working at Los Alamos, of course, my colleagues, had a different perspective. They were willing to do absolutely anything in order to win the war. And if this included killing a lot of Japanese, that was too bad. The whole question of whether the decision was a wise one by Truman or not remains in dispute. The conventional wisdom these days is that it was the wrong decision. There were efforts made to have the weapon detonated as an exhibition to the Japanese, to show them what could happen to them if they didn't surrender. But Truman decided not to use it as an exhibition, but decided to use it directly on one of the cities. And the decision was made to use it a second time when they didn't surrender after the first. But what has gone on subsequently, historically, is what Oppenheimer feared most. And of course, he spent the latter years of his life after he left Los Alamos working to prevent this kind of thing from happening. He was very fearful of the eventual impact of the development of this weapon on international relations and on the lives of millions of people. Fortunately, no weapons have been detonated since that time. One could argue that what happened is really the best preventive defense against the use subsequently of another episode. However, what we're going through right now with Iran should be a warning that even though it hasn't happened yet, it could happen. What they're developing, what they're trying to develop, of course, is the type of weapon that was used at Hiroshima. It's quite obvious from the news reports with the use of a cylinder and so on. It's essentially known as the gun method. It was called Little Boy in the vernacular, and the one that was used in Nagasaki was called Little Boy and Fat Man.